Welcome to the Kill Rock Podcast. This is episode 55 featuring Jameson Ketchum from the Cadence Inc. Before we get started, I gotta let you guys know that today's podcast is brought to you by Audible.com. Go to audibletrial.com/killrock, pick up a free 30-day trial, sign up for your free audiobook download, and help support the Kill Rock Podcast. Over 150,000 titles to choose from for your iPhone, Android, Kindle, MP3 player, whatever you listen to anything on. That is audibletrial.com/killrock.
I promise.
And that was Heart of Fire by the band Convictions, featuring Ryan Kirby from Fit for a King. We actually have Fit for a King coming up on one of our Warped Tour specials in just a few weeks. Guys, go check out Convictions. They have a brand new album coming out. It's going to come out, I believe, in the fall. I'm kind of backed up on a lot of new stuff. So let's just say fall, and then I'll correct myself later. So, yes. And yeah, Fit for a King. They're going to be on one of our Warped Tour specials coming up. Guys, amazing time I had at the Warped Tour with the Faces of Music guys, interviewing bands, watching some bands. Didn't get to see a lot of bands because I was working most of the time. But it was a great time. And, you know, if you're going to check out any band on the Warped Tour this year, if you're super into metal and you're super into metalcore or whatever you want to call it, Fit for a King is a great band to check out. I'm going to go on record. I think I've said it before on the show, but I'll say it again after watching them again, or, you know, for the second time. I think Ryan Kirby is definitely the best live screamer in the game. In the game today, in the metalcore genre live, he is the best screamer. And I don't really go out to a lot of shows, so you could take that with a grain of salt. But, you know, he has a lot of range. When he goes high, I'm not a big fan because he does a little Fry, you know, Dan Wyden type scream. That, but his lows are so brutal and they're so heavy, and he could hold his screams for such a long time that you can't believe a lot of the power is coming out of this little guy. Like he's like Rory Rodriguez from Dayseeker. He's actually might be a little smaller than Rory, to be honest. And if you meet the guys from Fit for a King, you might think Bobby, the guitar player, is the front man because he's big, tall dude, deep, booming voice. And then Ryan Kirby comes up. He has a small little talking voice. Like he's quiet, he's reserved, and he's the one that just lets go live. So, you know, stay tuned for a couple weeks. We got a great interview with them, congratulating them on their whole Billboard award type, not Billboard award, Billboard, ranking, you know, all that stuff for, Slave to Nothing. Great album. Go check it out. We'll put it on the iTunes. Not iTunes, but we'll put it on the description list on the bottom if you guys want to check it out. Guys, today we have Jameson Ketchum from the Cadence Incorporated. And you might not know Jameson too well, and that's okay. He's a publicist, but he's a publicist for some great bands like Emery and As Cities Burn, Pacific Gold, Abandoned Kansas, Velasca, who we've had on the show, and also Joe Langson, a former member of My Children, My Bride, his new project, The Woodsman's Babe. I had such a hard time pronouncing that word when I had him on the show, but there it is, The Woodsman's Babe. We have Jameson. Great guy. It does a lot. Very, really, really informative, especially for those that want to get in the music industry but don't want to play in bands. I think this is a great episode for you guys to check out because Jameson, he comes from the journalistic background. He used to, you know, be one of the editors at Substream, and he used to do all this stuff on that side, and now he's doing public relations, which is totally different. Well, it's kind of the same, but totally different. So stay tuned for that. And yeah, man, get stoked. We got some great music coming up for you guys as well. Thank you guys for joining us. Man, it's been a crazy, crazy couple weeks. We weren't able to release an episode last week, and I think it's mostly to, you know, I'm to blame. I was really backed up in regards to getting the Warped Tour stuff done. I was in Pomona on that Friday, which was the 19th. And I was in Ventura on the 21st, which was the Sunday, obviously. And along with that, I was finishing up school projects, some presentations I had to do. So I kind of had to, you know, I had to take a week off from the Kill Rock podcast, which is something I hate doing. I hate taking weeks off from you guys. It's not fun at all. Like, I love talking to you guys and I love talking about music. But with school, it was kind of difficult. And I promise it's not going to happen too often. At least I'm going to try to promise you guys that. But, you know, it was interesting. You guys soaked up the As Cities Burn episode. My gosh, with Aaron Lunsford, you guys were maniacs. Great feedback from you guys. I hope you guys enjoyed it. We love As Cities Burn here on the Kill Rock Podcast. We love them so much, and we're glad that you guys got to check out that episode. So thank you guys for downloading. And if it wasn't for Jameson, that episode wouldn't have happened, right? I would not have been able to get Lunsford on the show, and hopefully I'm able to get Lunsford on the show again, especially with how well it did. So we're stoked that Jameson's on this show. Before we get to Jameson, though, I gotta let you guys know that in the next couple weeks, besides the Warped Tour special, we have some incredible bands coming on the show. We have next week, Phineas. Sean McCullough is going to come on the Kill Rock Podcast. He's going to talk about the whole thing that happened with Red Chord Records, and he's very transparent about it. You guys are not going to want to miss this, especially for those that want to be in bands that want to sign to a record label. He's going to give you a lot of great advice on what to do and what not to do, what to look for, and also what not to look for when it comes to signing to a record label. And we also talk about their brand new album, Till the End. People, this album is brutal. I'm serious. You guys are going to love Till the End by Phineas. I got to listen to it a few times already. I actually got to listen to it with Sean. Sean got a little lisp going. I got to listen to it with Sean in his room, and I'm not doing any sweet brags or any. It's just, you know, what cool friends do, I guess. I don't know. But yeah, you guys are going to enjoy the album. We're going to play a couple songs from that album next week as well. For now, just go to their YouTube channel. Actually, go to the Artery Recordings YouTube channel. You could check out the video for Telestai, which is their brand new song, and also they did a live music video for, and Dead Choir, which I want to say is a lyric video. It's been a while since I checked. It might not be a lyric video. There actually just might be lyrics in the description. But go check that out. Phineas, Till the End. We also have Cam Smith, again, from Hotel Books. He sent me a text message a few days before we recorded, and he wasn't going to be on the show, but he invited himself back on, which that's something that Cam does. And I appreciate it. I love Cam Smith. He's one of my great friends. And he has a lot to say. He's not promoting anything, which is rare for anyone on the show. Well, I guess Jameson, he's not really promoting anything. But, you know, Cam is one of my great friends. And if he wants, you know, a soapbox to stand on so he could talk to you, the listeners of the Kill Rock Podcast, so we could talk to the Hotel Books Allegiance of Doom. I just made that up right now. Kind of like it. It's kind of like Legion of Doom, Allegiance of Doom, whatever. But yeah, if he wants a soapbox, I'll give him a soapbox. He's a great guy and an amazing friend. So stay tuned for that. That's going to be in a couple of weeks. And we're going to talk more about POD when he comes on the show. And also stay tuned for the Warped Tour specials. They're going to be every Tuesday. On the first episode a couple days ago, we featured American Opera and pop punk, pop rock band, whatever you want to call them, Boy Meets World on the show. If you haven't checked it out yet, go check it out. It's the Warped Tour Special Edition, Volume 1. I don't know what I'm going to call these things. I really don't. There's so many things you could call Warped Tour stuff, and I don't want to make the title so wordy and yada, yada, yada. So, you know, I think... I don't know what I'm going to call them. I really don't. Just, you know, look at the iTunes list of podcasts underneath Kill Rock Podcast, and it's there. It's actually the one before this one. So that's that. We're going to get to Jameson Ketchum right now. Well, not really right now. We're going to get to him after we play a jam from Fallstar. This song is called Alexandria 363, here on the Kill Rock Podcast. You know, when me and Brody from Indie Vision, we're pretty good friends, and we noticed one day you were like retweeting us, or like you're tagging us to like post on Twitter, and we're like, I looked at it, I saw the Cadence, and I'm like, I remember emailing someone the Cadence when I was at IVM, and Brody kind of said the same thing, so we were like, we're really interested in finding out who you were. I think this is the best chance. Who are you?
So you've done no research here.
No, I don't do research for anything. I just say, hey, let me talk to your band, and I'll just wing it.
No, yeah, that's funny. And the funny thing about Brody and Indie Vision and stuff is that I felt like for years and years, every time I connected with someone Indie Vision, it was a different person.
Uh-huh.
So I was like starting over every time, and I was like, how many people work for Indie Vision? I was like, who's in charge here? Where's an adult?
Right.
Because there was always just so many different emails. I had no idea what was going on. So anyway, yeah, good question. Who am I? I started out, briefly, I'll give the background. I started out doing music journalism. I had, for a while, and you might remember this, something called Hopecore Magazine.
Yes.
Yeah, so that had started out as a radio station. A friend of mine in college started, and he knew I wanted to do journalism and music. And so he was living in Idaho and called me up and said, hey, why don't you not go to school anymore and come start a magazine for this brand? So we did that for about a year and a half. That was a Christian-based magazine, and we went all kinds of weird routes with that. Tried to be a nonprofit for a while. I can't even remember all the weird things we did with that, but that led to just kind of doing some freelance jobs, freelancing for Substream, Amp that was around at the time, Outburn, stuff like that, and ended up being the editor at Substream for 3 years.
Oh,
up
wow.
Up until the end of 2013, that was pretty much my full-time job. And I was just, both from Hopecore and Substream and stuff, I was dealing with publicists and managers all day, and I loved it. I mean, part of that whole job is just to kind of like email someone and try to be their friend and, you know, try to work together. And after a while, I thought, I think I could do your side of this. I think I want to talk to me. That makes sense.
Yeah.
And I had friends bands that I was already kind of, you know, practicing on, local bands that had needs and couldn't figure certain things out. And I thought, well, if we're both kind of starting out, you know, you're in the band and I'm in the industry part, let's figure out what we can learn from each other. And they just left Face Down Records about last year, I guess, Fall Star. So they're kind of the band I started with, heavy band out of Portland, doing press for, and yeah, just getting them into different publications and reviews and all that. And that just became my favorite thing to do. And that's kind of where Cadence came from. That's part one.
Okay.
But I don't want to keep going in case you have a myriad of questions.
No, I mean, it's kind of, you know, it's funny that you mentioned that you kind of learned from your friends, like your friends that are in bands. That's kind of how I got into interviewing. When I started at IndieVision, I was doing videos for them. And my good friends in Phineas, they wanted to be, you know, one of the first bands I wanted them to be one of the first bands. You know, we played a lot of shows together when I was in a band. And So, I mean, this is before they kind of, you know, blasted off on that whole Red Chord deal. But,
right. You
know, that I did the same thing. Like, I learned how to do interviews just by talking with my friends and kind of hearing how they wanted to kind of perceive, they wanted the public to perceive themselves. But, you know, as a publicist, you've only been doing this for a few years then.
Kind of, yes. Okay. I mean, I think the first form of Cadence, which I had it under a different name, well, I figured out what the hell I was doing. Mm-hmm. But I think the first really incarnation of that was probably a good 6 or 7 years back now. And I never really had any goals of taking it very far. It was almost, I remember reading about actors before the internet days where they would basically pretend to be their own agents when a casting director would call to talk to them rather than basically admitting, I'm small time, I'm answering my own phone. They pretend to be someone else and say, yeah, I'm this guy's agent, and yeah, let's set this up. And I remember thinking to the bands I was working with, like, not that I didn't want to deceive anyone, but I thought, well, I want to take this part of the job off your plate. And if I'm going to do that, I need like a name. It can't just be like, hey, I'm this band's buddy, you know, got to talk to me first.
Right.
So, yeah. So, I mean, a lot of stuff just came out of problem solving. It was just, hey, I need a name to go along with this. Oh, is this email taken? Okay, I'll slightly change. Okay, I guess that's the name now. So it was completely just like fumbling through the first, you know, year of figuring it all out. And really where it's at now, and I'm sure you're getting to this, but where it's at now is that it's still PR. It's still wanting to help bands, young bands, and immature bands figure out, do you need a publicist? Do you need this kind of coverage yet? Do you have anything to talk about? I worked for a different PR company for a little over a year in 2013. And at the time I thought, like, okay, like I built my own business and it's going, you know, going pretty well. I was noticed by another company that was starting up, but I thought had way more potential than what I was doing at the time. And it of course felt great. Someone, you know, wants to hire you and says, you did a good job here. Come do this here. But something that I just learned, I think working with other people and not, you know, you probably know this, you get used to being your own boss. You get used to doing things your own way. You don't necessarily, it sounds immature maybe, but you don't, you know, just things are done a certain way and you don't want to take the time to explain it to somebody else or learn somebody else's process. Like,
right. You
know what works for you and you want to preserve that. So that was part of it, but something else that I think I just discovered by working for what people would consider a more traditional PR company was there were things that we were saying no to the artist because they didn't fall in the PR lane. And that makes total sense. But what I think discovered about myself was I didn't want to have to tell a band no for something that they were needed help with. And yeah, I'm not going to go book your tour or be, you know, everyone's manager or anything, but I don't like just giving a band a stop sign. Like I want to give you, this is super cheesy, I want to give you like a redirection. I want to say, you know what, I don't have any expertise in that area, but let me go. Going to lead you to something I can at least connect you with, because I just don't want to throw up a complete brick wall and say like, nope, that doesn't fall in my job description, you know, don't ask me again. So I think what Cadence now has developed into, and this is even why I just changed to the Cadence Inc. that you see now, is I don't really want to have a description. You know, right. You can go read my description on my site and Facebook and stuff, but I try to just keep it as broad, you know, let me know what you need, and I can tell you yes or no, and if I tell you no, I'm at least going to connect you to something or someone that knows what they're doing. I have, you know, partners that are booking agents, partners that are photographers and web designers and press kit designers. I want to be able to say, okay, you're a brand new band, you need this, 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 and this, and here's my team that is going to do it for you, give you quotes, figure out how to give you that first leg up, really.
Right. So basically, you're kind of running your own PR firm, but at the same time, you are also kind of being a middleman for those small bands that might need something else rather than just PR, in a sense.
Yeah, I mean, I think, yeah, PR is certainly the focus of if you're working directly with me, that's what me and you are going to be working on.
Right.
At the same time, you know, I also do label shopping.
Okay.
There's a lot of stuff that would fall under just me and just the Cadence. So like I said, if a band is like, yeah, you know, this is going well with PR over here, but like, you know, we don't really have a new press kit or new photos, you know, that need to be done. I can go connect you with, I have a partner called C-Raps Media, which is actually the vocalist from Falstar has his own business.
Okay.
And, you know, I don't, you know, have the skills or the time, whatever it is, to create you a new press kit. But here's Chris. Chris is going to work with you on how to get this done.
But you'll write a good press release.
Yeah, press releases, bios, anything that's, you know, obviously text-driven.
Right.
That sounds so ancient now. But, yeah, I mean, I love to talk, you know, social media tips and just branding in general. And would work with the band closely and say, like, what are your goals? I'll tell you what I think maybe you should. But I never want to be that manager or even publicist that just comes in and wrecks everything you're doing and says, no, you need to get a look, go get some leather jackets. You know, I know publicists that do that, and it can work. It totally can. But I would hate to just make a band betray what they want to do.
Right. I think it's great that you brought up, how archaic the whole text press release type deal is. Cause when I was at MI, I was taking I think it was just straight up publicity class. I don't remember what it was called, but my teacher, who was the editor of Music Connection for, like, you know, once upon a time, he brought in his old, you know, press kits, and they were like, you know, hard copy CDs inside manila folders with, you know, a pull out, you know, press release sheet. And I was like, man, I don't get those. Like, when I get something from you, or if I get something from like Mike Kubelios or whatever, it's, you know, it's either through Holics or it's through some type of, you know, spreadsheet that you created. How has everything kind of changed? Like, how do you cope with that? With the changing times?
Well, yeah, it is a really good question. I mean, like I said, I've only been doing this 6 or 7 years, so it's not like I used to send out, you know, hundreds of physical press releases a week or anything like that.
Right.
And I remember even, you know, being a writer and getting them and stuff, and I enjoyed it. But at the same time, that's just physical clutter that's stacking up. And, you know, if it's, I'd say 1 in every 10 of those packages was something that pertained to, let's say, you know, when I was at Substream, that pertained to, like, our style, to something that we would cover. And it's not that I just, you know, judged everything by its cover and threw it out, but there's certainly ones that you can tell, okay, you are just mass blasting this out there, and you didn't do any research on what this publication is about.
Right.
So I think there's that side to it, of course, of doing your due diligence. But of course, I send out physical copies of stuff. I enjoy doing that, and I still enjoy getting physical copies of things. But if I could just shoot, of course, like, you could just shoot an email to people, you know, people, I would think, and you can, I would love to get your answer on this. I mean, most outlets know that the first time around, they are getting a mass email.
Right.
the key, of course, is the personal follow-up. I know a lot of publicists that don't ever do personal follow-up, and that even their follow-up is just another mass blast of like, hey, buddy, you know, and that covers everyone. That's not going to get you anywhere.
Right.
and it's not like it's this huge time. I mean, it's time consuming, but it's your business. So sit down, write a personal email, go spend time on the person's site too. Something that I wanted to do from the beginning, having come from, you know, building a website building a magazine with HopeCore and then joining other smaller sites, was when I started working with bands that were bigger, if I got a request from a blog that had just started or one that, you know, wasn't AP, I wanted to give those smaller outlets a chance.
Right.
Because it's super hard to get those first couple interviews. You're going to interview your friends, you should definitely, you know, hone your skills with that and stuff too. But as far as getting over the hump of like, okay, I want to get in some bigger bands, I know the publicist to talk to, but they've never heard of me. Why should they take me seriously? After a while, I just thought, well, I came from that. It's really hard. I would love to just be able to say, you know, hey, that was a good pitch that you sent me. You know, here's maybe, I'm not going to coach everyone, but in my mind, thinking, here's maybe some things they could work on, but I used to make the same mistakes. So I would rather talk to that person and say like, yeah, okay, let's set this up and guide it a little bit more too. I'm not going to set up As Cities Burn with an 8-year-old who just set up a blog.
I appreciate that.
But Aaron would love it, with some intelligence, I do want to be able to say like, yeah, give back to those smaller blogs that are trying to take off, and they're just learning. I mean, you're going to make a ton of mistakes.
Well, I truly appreciate you sending us Cities Burn. They've actually blew up. I think they're the highest downloaded and played episode that I've had so far. So I do appreciate that.
Really?
Yes. In just 4 days.
That's awesome.
Yes.
Well, I was just looking through the list too when I was grabbing Aaron's episode, because I knew, you know, I'd sent, you got Emery and Velasquez, right, and stuff, which thank you very much for all of those.
For sure.
But I mean, I saw Kevin Lyman was on there. Like, I mean, you got some big names.
Yeah.
I'm surprised his didn't.
Oh, who's Kevin Lyman's? I'm surprised too. It's funny, like when this whole thing started, I didn't know who I was going to get on the show. I just knew that I knew what to do because of the schooling that I went through and also, you know, the experience at IndieVision, because Josh wasn't, you know, dude, when I was there, Josh Murphy wasn't necessarily the one that was heading everything up. Like he was he was gone. I forgot either. He was just, I don't know what the deal was, but he wasn't there as much. So we were all, and when you're talking about how you were getting emails from different people, we were all reaching out for ourselves for IndieVision.
Right.
So I had to learn that way. And when I started this thing, I think the first big band that I really got, even though I had Volumes and Dayseeker, I mean, I grew up with Dayseeker, so that was easy, but Volumes was kind of a get. But Hates Today, when they started their Indiegogo,
yeah,
that was the first big deal band that I had on the show. And I think since then, like, I think that was a real confidence booster that I could kind of get whoever I want. And it's not to be boastful or anything, because, I mean, there's been a lot of trials along the way. But I am surprised that episodes like Kevin Lyman or, you know, Hayes Today, even Emery. I mean, Matt Carter was on the show, and I thought it was going to do a lot better than it did. I don't know how As Cities Burn's doing, that episode's doing as well as it is.
Oh, I think I think they have a rabid fan base, and there's always just so much mystery around them. They could show up with with 10 new songs tomorrow, blow everyone away, and then disappear by next week. I think the mystery is really interesting with them.
So maybe that's it.
I don't know.
You really? I didn't think about that, but I slightly agree with you, because after TJ left, you kind of didn't know what As Cities Burn was.
Right. Oh, yeah, and I don't know if Aaron gets in. I'm sure he does in your guys' interview. Did you guys talk about his upcoming book about the band?
Oh, yeah, kind of.
Oh, okay.
He even like mentioned he needs to come back on to promote it more, because we talked about baseball for most of the episode. Anyways,
that's awesome.
He did mention though that Bad Christian was going to put it out, so I got that
yeah
great exclusive there.
Yeah, that's gonna. And I don't know if I. No, I knew that. I've read the draft and stuff, and it's gonna be really interesting. And I think for people that grew up without Cities Burn too, there'll be a lot of stuff that people didn't know, and a lot of stuff that will be a little bit more palatable as an adult now. Okay. I think reading something like that when you're younger and music is your whole life, and especially in the Christian world where it's like, uh-oh, I saw that guy have a beer, he must be an atheist now.
Right.
I think it's just going to give a good understanding to the band and then the Christian, I think, music world in that scene as well. So
right. Well, it'll be interesting. Cody hates the Pope, so he is an atheist.
Cody, yeah, apparently Cody, I did get to that part. Cody hates the Pope. We have like the most popular Pope ever, but Cody, man, Cody just hates him.
Cody, yeah, Cody's a jerk. You know what? I'll be honest though. I always thought Cody must be a jerk.
Because he doesn't talk and stuff?
Yeah, I met him once and he was really nice to me, but from, you mm-hmm. know, kind of going towards like to bios and kind of everyone kind of put Cody on a higher pedestal than everyone else. So I don't know.
Yeah.
Maybe it was just my perception, or maybe it was just the people's perception around me. But I don't know. Can you answer that?
That is interesting because I don't know Cody at all. I only met Cody once years ago, like on a Hawkboy tour, and I didn't know Hawk. Yeah, that sounded weird. Hawkboy.
Yeah, Hawkboy.
Hawkboy. I didn't know a ton about him at the time, and so. I don't remember going up to him. It's funny to think of now because I went up to him brazenly like you would any other like band dude and, you know, introduced who I was and just trying to chit chat and stuff. And he's pretty, I mean, I think he's a shy guy and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
But super, super nice for sure. And he, you know, I was working for Hopecore at the time. He did a little Hopecore plug and all that. And then, you know, years later, learning more about the band and about him and stuff, I just thought like, oh, like I don't think he wants to talk to people. And I don't think it's anything having to do with feeling rude or anything like that. I don't know. I would love to get, of course I would love to get his perspective, but yeah. I think
I should have asked
from
Aaron.
And even just from the businessy side of things, like we were talking about the mystery of the band, like mm-hmm. maybe that, I don't think he does it on purpose, but to me, that's really interesting. That's like, okay, why won't this guy do all the interviews? You know, what is the story? And I feel this way with Brand New, where Jesse doesn't really do interviews anymore.
Right.
At least he doesn't really, for a while, supposedly, was that he wasn't doing any interviews in the States for a couple years.
For The Devil and God, I think all the press was UK.
It was all UK. They didn't like put out any videos and stuff.
Right.
And I went and saw his. I love how off tangent we're getting here.
No, that's great. That's what I love about this.
I saw him play solo a few years ago, and he was just hanging out back to the venue and stuff. And kids were asking all kinds of questions, and he was really nice and was, you know, being polite and answering stuff. But this girl tried to snap a picture of him as she was walking by, and he was like, "Hey, like, don't do that. That's so weird. I'm sorry. It's just so weird." Wouldn't take pictures with people like. Was a little weird about signing stuff. And so I remember thinking, of course I would love to sit down with this guy because what is going on? Like, I love that someone that writes weird, eccentric things is actually like that
yeah.
in real life. And that he's not just putting on some whatever act. But after a while I thought it's like, it would be more respectful of me as a fan of Brand New to never try to get an interview with him. Because you know that he's not into it. You know he doesn't want to be there.
I think that's how I feel about Thrice. Because Thrice is my favorite band.
Yeah.
And I've been trying to get Dustin on my show for a while. And every time I kind of have the bullets, and like, mm-hmm. you know, his publicist is super nice.
Yeah.
I just kind of, you know, shy away because I think I'm just scared of meeting someone that I idolize and they're going to be a jerk. Or they're just not, because I've listened to his interviews. He's not the best interview.
Yeah. I think guys like that, you just really have to, I don't know. I think if they're going to be there, if they're going to give into an interview and the time and the conversation, that it just has to really intrigue them. So I think the questions just have to be, and there's no guarantee of any of this, but the questions just really have to be really well thought out, really in depth. But yeah, some people, you never know. I've never had a bad experience interviewing Dustin.
Oh, okay.
I had one experience
with IVM, and it was when I was starting to get into this audio stuff, and it didn't go well. I think it was my fault, though.
Yeah, that's the worst, because it's nothing to do with you.
Yes.
Well, it might be, but it's not like a personality thing.
Thank you. I appreciate that. Let's kind of get back on subject, I guess. Well,
we'll do a whole other episode about that interview sometime.
Dude, you know what, though? But that's great, though, because you're actually giving me a lot of advice on what I could do to make myself better, make my show better, so I do appreciate that. In regards, though, because you did do the Hope Core magazine, and you were with Substream for a while, and now you're kind of on the other side of the fence. I see a lot of bickering and a lot of battling between publicists and press, and, you know, where is the line? Like, who's actually in charge? Is the publicist in charge? Is the press in charge? Like, how does this even work?
Yeah. Oh man, I don't know if there's an answer for that. It is tough, because I do feel like the publicist holds all the cards. Of course, they're you know, if they say no, if they say like the guy's not into it, or we're gonna pass on that, like you can't really push it any further. So it is hard to get that brick wall. At the same time, the publicists aren't always communicating with the artists. That's the toughest thing for me to handle, is that, you know, yeah, the bigger the artist, of course, they're going to get more requests, and they don't, an artist talking to you isn't always going to know who they're talking to.
Right.
That's the reality of it, is they might do 10 interviews that day. It's not like they're sitting there going like, yeah, I'm talking to like Keith from Kill Rock necessarily. Like the better ones might, and the ones that are more polite and stuff, but right. I get that they get overwhelmed and all that. Anyways, I've also had experiences where I've gone to interview a friend, let's say, and even with close friends, I always go through the publicist no matter what. Because they have a schedule, they just want to keep things streamlined. Totally fine. It feels funny, but I'm never gonna cut someone out and just be like, oh, I just called my buddy, you know,
right?
Whoever. I was gonna try to name drop someone, but I won't. for an interview, you know, it's just gonna sound like a jerk. So, anyways, I always go through that process. But at the same time, I've done stuff like that where the publicist was like, yeah, like he's too busy, we're gonna have to pass, or he said not this time, that kind of thing. I'm like, I know that he didn't.
Right.
Like, and so it's tough. I think the publicist holds all the cards. I think there's nowhere near as much respect for press as there used to be, because there's way more of it. You know, like I said, every kid can have a blog. It's tough for a publicist to sift. It is their job, but it is tough for them to sift through what's legit and what's not. So they might just say, hey, we're only going to take the ones we're going to take AP, Substream, Outbird, and HM, and that's it.
Okay.
And neglect all the rest. So I think it's a constant battle. I think at the same time, it's somewhat weeded out the journalists that either aren't serious about it or are in it for the wrong reasons. I would hope, you know, competition is always going to breed a better product. But I hope that we don't get too oversaturated to where publicists are just like, nope, I'm going to take the top five with the best numbers and that's it. I'm not giving anyone else a chance.
Let's say like someone from the press is emailing, you know, someone at Victory or someone at Epitaph. I feel like those are the hardest labels to get a band.
Mm-hmm.
Small time press. Is it good to name drop? Like when you're sending out that, you know, first email, like say I were to do it, I would say, hey, I've had Kevin Lyman, I've had S-80's Burn, Emery, Hayes Today, yada 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 yada. Like, is that a good thing, or is that just something that kind of turns people off?
No, I think you have to do it.
Uh-huh.
I think you have to assume, I think it's safer to assume whoever you're emailing has never heard of you, because they do get so many requests and stuff. Every once in a while, I'll send stuff out for Bad Christian for different, you know, trying to get different guests.
Mm-hmm.
I did it for Heart Support, too, for years. I actually just quit over there. Heart Support, I don't know if you know.
Yeah.
About that, but it's
Jake
Monger Springs Red. So I did a lot of their video stuff, a lot of their the interview portion of videos with bands and stuff. And so
coming
from
did
that
you do it with the Silent Planet guys, or was that after?
I didn't do that one. No, okay. I think I don't remember who did that, but no, I did like Black Veil Brides, White. Okay. Quite a few of them. But a tough thing with that was, like, I remember going into it thinking, like, well, you know, I get a name drop, August Burns Red, you know, and Heart Support has definitely grown a lot, and thinking, like, this will be pretty easy, but it's not a media outlet, for one, right. So I'm coming at it from, like, hey, we're this nonprofit, I have to explain so much.
Mm.
We're this nonprofit, we do this, it was started by this guy, this is why, you know, like, this is why I'm talking to you.
Mm.
And so I would, of course, you know, that's fine to name drop him. He's the founder of it, but I would always throw something in at the end of, like, and here's, you know, here's a few people we've already talked to, and pick the biggest names out, of course.
Right.
And say, here's who we already had. A Day to Remember, Amber Lynn, Black Veil, Lights, all these big names, and include one or two links, I'd say too. I think the biggest thing, in your case, sending out something like that, trying to get bigger names on your show, is to just, you're trying to give them, for one, as much information as you can without, you know, of course, sending 20 links in an email, but making their decision as easy as possible.
Right.
You say, and of course, picking something that's similar. Let's say you were emailing me for Acidity Burn. I would want to see you just have Ace the Day. Like, that would almost be an automatic, like, yeah, okay, this guy knows who he's talking to. He knows he's had bands that are similar. Like, that would be my quickest, in my brain, the quickest thing of just saying, yep, no problem. Because I know that, I mean, like I said, you've had someone that's similar, and Ace the Day said yes. Whether that's Ace the Day, their publicist, whatever, that's an automatic, I agree. If they did it and they're happy with it, great.
Well, I hope everyone's happy with coming on this show.
I don't know how they can't be.
It's okay. I mean, I do my best. So when you started with, you know, the Cadence, I mean, yes, it's been years. Did you kind of, with the relationships that you had, is that how you got the bands that you signed? Like, because I know when we talked about, like, you know, the Solid State stuff, like how Solid State does their business, and you mentioned that you know a lot about how they did their business. Did that kind of help you get the bands that you got on your clientele list, though?
Yeah, that's funny. I haven't talked too much about that. There's certainly lots of random either coincidences or contacts, I'd say. The one nice thing of doing these Heart Support interviews, I'd say, was that because I wasn't coming from a media outlet, a traditional media outlet, I was able to do those interviews and then kind of, you know, if we're standing around having that extra chit-chat, most of the time I would know if a band had a publicist or not. I would know if I was way out of my league or not. That's how Emery came about. I think I had emailed them about it, knowing they were doing Backrishon, knowing they were kind of going DIY and stuff. And I think even that, probably the first time I tried to contact them, I just thought, like, I'm really at this point of, like, I'll just try anything. And it's not even out of desperation, but just out of, like, who cares? Like, I'm not going to be disappointed if I don't hear back from Emery, like, one of my favorite bands. And then we did a Heart Support interview and just kept in touch after that. And they've been, I mean, I can't promote Matt and Toby and Joey and just what they've done with Backrishon enough. And the fact that, you know, I don't know if you covered a band in Kansas or not.
Not yet, no.
Okay, yeah. So I won't go into every band story, but even that, a band in Kansas was the first band I ever had stay at my house, you know, that I ever had a band sleep on my floor back in like 07 or 08 when I was in college. And, you know, so 7, 8 years later, still being in touch with Jeremy, their vocalist, watching them get bigger. You know, they were on Goatee for a while. It was a huge deal. Went back to doing it all on their own. And so some of those connections and relationships started so far back and at such a random place. And it is crazy to say, like, okay, well, back in 07, if someone was like, well, by 2015, you'll have like three or four of your favorite bands and, you know, you'll be doing this, this, and this. Like, that would have sounded so insane. Probably even a year ago, really. I know you're looking maybe a little.
First of all, how do you get these bands to trust you to do this stuff? Because you handle not just, you know, getting them out to the press, but you also handle, you know, promo copies of albums that could easily mm-hmm. be online in a matter of seconds. Like,
yeah,
how does that work out for you?
Yeah, I've had pretty good luck with that. I don't think, I mean, it's hard to say, like, that any band, does any band not have an album leak anymore? I mean, does that even happen?
Well, I know when I had Matt on the show, he was mentioning every time they would do a Break It Down podcast, there would be a video on YouTube for the new song that they released.
Yeah, I saw that too. I don't know that there's many ways to protect against it, other than, like, I know you might have had him on your show. Do you know James Shotwell from Hollux and Under the Gun?
We booked that, and then, yeah, it kind of fell through. I still want to get him on, though.
Oh, okay. Yeah, you should. He's awesome. He does everything. I remember talking to him about... Yeah. I remember talking to him about setting up with Hollux so that I could, you know, have press outlets stream albums that way, and I didn't end up doing it, which is fine, but... I mean, we have a really simple system of, you know, download codes, and so at least that way we're tracking who has what and when. Thankfully, I don't know. There's no one that's, like, on my blacklist, as far as I know, of, you know, okay, you screwed up once, you know, can't do it again. And that, honestly, that does kind of go back to trying to have relationships with outlets. And, yeah, it's just going to be, you know, emails or whatever, but I also want to be able to, like I said, not only champion these smaller outlets, but if I go to South by Southwest, like, I want to go meet those people. Like, right. And I hope that there's a community there of, like, hey, like, there's no reason we should be hanging out in Texas right now, other than we've been emailing from across the country and helping each other out. Like, that community aspect of it is awesome. So I always want to cultivate that. And of course, I hope a side product to that is, you know, I can trust you and you're not going to leak anything. As far as bands trusting me, I mean, I've been really lucky. I hope I have a good reputation and people would speak highly of the cadence and stuff.
Right.
But yeah, I mean, I think you just have to prove your work. I think, you know, it's a lot of, I'm way more on the over communicating side of, like, I want to talk to you on the phone. If you're in town, like, this is probably the only time I'll see you in person this year. So, like, we're going to hang out. And some bands are all about that. It's great. It's way more fun to be friends with the bands that you're working with. Mm-hmm. And other guys are just, like, all business. And they just say, like, just get it done. Let me know when it's done. And that's that. I certainly have a varying respect for both of those approaches.
Now, do you have those relationships with the bands that you have now? If you want a name drop, you can name drop. I'm pretty sure.
Well, I feel like the name drop might be negative. No, I think I've found a good balance with where I think, I mean, of course you have to read what the band wants too. I think I found a good balance of, what's maybe time wasting with that kind of thing too. I have no problem. I've had a few bosses at some nonprofits that I've worked at, that were so no nonsense and so, seemingly unfriendly, but the most just genius, intelligent, creative people I've ever worked with. So after working for several people like that, I worked for, like, XXX Church for a while, and that was a good example of just the marketing and just the creativity that goes into that. Nonprofit was just so mind blowing and they're so successful. So now I feel like if I do see someone like that, and Matt Carter knows this, I think other people at Backers should have made the same comment. Like, it's this odd intelligence to where you're used to going into a situation trying to have this surfacey, you know, how's it going? How's the wife? You know, what's the weather like up there and stuff. And there's some people that just don't want to do that
right.
at all. And they won't even humor you.
Right.
And it's surprising to see, but it's not, after a while you get to know that person and you're like, oh, it's not hurtful. You are just like a get to the point.
Right.
I like you. You like me, but we don't need to talk about it. We need to just get work done.
I could see that, especially for those. I mean, it's a busy process just being in a band and then doing what you do. Like, everybody's busy. So, I mean, I could see how, like, you know, the small talk maybe for some might feel like it gets in the way of, you know, getting stuff done.
Right.
So,
yeah, I wish I was less that way. I mean, only in the sense of if someone said, I'll make you more creative, and a marketing genius, but socially you're going to be weird. I'd say, all right, I'll try that.
When you decided, well, okay, what do you prefer doing? Do you prefer being a part of the press, or do you prefer doing what you're doing now? Because for myself, I'm kind of in a crossroads right now. I went back to school. I'm going mm-hmm. to Full Sail University for media and communications. And I don't know if I want to be a publicist, but I can get my master's in public relations. So what is more fun mm-hmm. to do?
I'm always so interested in that. And we'll have to talk when you're done with school or something, because okay. obviously Full Sail is music-centered.
To a certain extent, yes.
I know. I mean, I know other people. The former PR company that I worked for, the owner had, you know, a degree in, public okay. relations. And I remember thinking, like a general college, the music industry is just so different. It's mm-hmm. so, it's so experience and learn. It's so play it by ear. Every band's different. Every magazine. And I just feel like there's nothing that's going to take the place of jumping in and doing it. Of course, I admire the people that do go get their degree or that are in school for it, because there's going to be some book learning that I don't have for right. sure. But I have friends that say, like, well, maybe you should go back and finish your degree now. And I remember just being like, well, like everyone that I knew in the industry when I was starting out, like the people that I was so fortunate to know and get advice from when I was younger, you know, it was just such a resounding, like, just go do it. Like, right. oh yeah, like of course school is important and stuff, but you have a chance to go on tour for a little while. Like, do that now. It's like school will always be there. You can come back to this. And in music too, like you're never going to hear, if you're applying for a job, you're just trying to get some position, whatever it is, you're never going to hear, like, you have your degree, right?
Right.
I just don't think you're going to hear it. I think it's a bonus. I think it's great. But, like, that is totally my opinion. Nothing is going to hinge on you having your degree.
I totally agree with that. You know, I went a year at Musicians Institute to get my certificate in music business. And mm-hmm. the only thing that's really panned out is this podcast. Like, if I didn't go do that, I probably wouldn't have had, you know, I wouldn't have had the ability.
Oh, man.
It's all good.
I rolled my window, but it's not helping.
It's all good. Matt Baird's baby, Matt Baird, his little child, was on an episode of this podcast. So noises are great. But yeah, like I did a couple internships through it, but basically they didn't really teach me skills except mm-hmm. really how to write a press release or how to fill out a, what was it called? You know, I can't even think what it's called. I don't know why I'm blanking on this right now. It was my publishing class.
Oh, man.
It was a whatever. It was a sheet, you know, for basically for sync licenses and whatnot. Placement sheets. I forgot what they're called.
Hope your teacher's not listening to this one.
I hope not either. I'm sorry, Aaron. I'm sorry. Forgive me. But I went to the school because I wanted to be a music supervisor. And then mm-hmm. Brian Ross, who was the music supervisor for my favorite movie, Miracle, he was telling the stories about how he got Aerosmith to let them use the original recording of Now Sing for the Year. Can't think of what that song's called. Right now.
Dream On,
yes.
Yeah.
How he got them to license that for less than $1 million. And I'm like, I was inspired. I was like, yes, I want to be a supervisor. I want to do that. And then I asked him, what can I do to do that? And he said, don't do it.
Yeah,
he just said music supervision, it's oversaturated with people doing it. Don't do it.
Huh.
So yeah, that was really inspiring.
I mean, I certainly get the logic, but I think in the last few years with changing what I've done, one of the biggest things I've learned is just also don't listen to people.
I agree with you now.
Yeah, I mean, I guess going back to your question, because I think that's really interesting, like, which way would I lean on those two?
Mm-hmm.
I think it was really easy for me to get burned out on music journalism after a while. At the end of 2013, when I was done at Substream, that was probably my biggest burnout phase. And a lot of it, I mean, not just from the work and the amount and everything, but there's just so few people, at least in the scene that you and I are kind of working in, that I feel like are really genuine when they talk to you mm-hmm. in their interviews. And as I'm sure everyone can guess, Almost Famous is the best movie ever made, especially about this topic.
Right.
But, you know, every single time I watched that movie, I was just like, there are not bands like that today. There are not bands there are a few, but at least not in an interview would you find out like, man, these guys are doing this because they love it so much. Like, it's the only thing in the world that makes sense to them. If they went home and couldn't play music anymore, like, I don't know what they would do. They would live in a ditch. Like, I love that. Like, people just had so much passion for it. They had to do it. And, I always use the example of Let Live. I think they are those guys that are doing that. I think Jason Butler is super interesting, and I think they're the band that I could compare to that ideal.
Right.
But I feel like there's so few and far between. So actually the last issue I did for Subtream was largely focused on Jason, mm-hmm. and it was complete. I had pitched this whole idea about doing this issue called The Good Guys, and basically picking out those people that were doing it, what I thought were for really the right reasons. And we're trying to evoke a change and trying to talk about things and weren't trying to be PC in all their interviews. Mm. And trying not to, you know, yeah, Jason bashed on Easy Targets, Miley Cyrus, I think we talked about a lot, but at the same time, I always just got a sense from him and a few others that's all they know. Like, they went from talking about whatever they wanted to in high school and college with their friends to singing about whatever they wanted to, whether that was political or religious or whatever. And I feel like the majority of other bands just figured out, oh, there's kind of a formula to this. There's a formula to like pop punk and the things you talk about. And in an interview, this is how you conduct yourself. And this is what you talk about. This is what you don't talk about. And I just thought, man, there's kind of been a lot of these unspoken rules put on things. And, again, you watch a movie like that, if you read Lester Bangs, his biography,
Lester Bangs, the real life one, not Philip Seymour Hoffman.
Yeah. Not Philip Seymour Hoffman.
Right.
His reply would be pretty inspiring too.
Oh, yeah.
No, the real Lester Bangs, people don't know this old school music journalist, but, you read about people like that, and he used to be, you know, in a way, a lot of bands put him on the same par as themselves. Like, just the idea of, like, rock star, let's say punk rock, like, the idea of just kind of saying whatever the hell you wanted. And I just don't think that's not around anymore. It's like, publicists will give you rules about what you can and can't talk about before an interview. And I get that there's dumb questions that they've answered 100 times, and I get that, you know, there's things that maybe they're going through a divorce. They don't want to talk about that right now. Mm-hmm. There's stuff that certainly makes sense. But, you know, I've been told things just as I'm going in the room with somebody. I've been told, oh, by the way, you can't mention this, 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 or this. And it's like, this is not going to be an interesting article. Now, what am I left with? Like, right. What can I ask him what his favorite ice cream is? Do you think people are into that?
Right.
I just think it, yeah, and I would love to... I got to a point where I thought, what if I did just ignore all those things? And I thought, that'd be so cool. What a cool romantic idea. And I thought, I'd be done after like 2 interviews. People would be like, okay, don't let him in here anymore.
Right.
And so I don't know. I certainly got a little bummed out about that idea. And I wanted to seek out bands like Let Live and again, a few others that I felt like, why aren't we paying more attention over here?
Hmm.
Why are we putting All Time Low on the cover again?
I see that because I feel like when you're talking about Let Live, I think you kind of get the same stuff out of Spencer Chamberlain when he was starting Sleepwave. What mm-hmm. would have happened if, you know, AP or people weren't allowed to ask him about Under Oath or allowed to ask him about God or allowed to ask him about, you know, certain details of why he's doing Sleepwave? Then there would have been no point in even having an interview or even promoting the band to begin with. Cause there's no Sleepwave if there was no Under Oath.
Exactly. I have this idea. You can tell me what you think of this. I have this idea to start writing some short stories. They're going to be maybe Kindle Singles eventually.
Okay.
Where I'm basically going to tell a story of an interview that I did. I'm going to change names and stuff, of course. Some of them are going to be straightforward, exactly what happens. And other ones I thought, well, it'd be funny if I kind of take this idea and exaggerate certain things to make it more entertaining. But I'm going to change the names. I'm going to drop hints in the stories as to who the story is actually about. Let's say, like, I'll work in some song titles and try to keep it a little obscure. But for people that are, you know, big fans, we'll try to figure it out.
Right.
To just tell some of these ridiculous stories. Because I think some of them are hilarious. Some of them are just like, I can't believe that guy is like that. Like good or bad. And right. I just think these are entertaining things. Maybe if I can't go in there and be blunt and honest, and put out an article that's blunt and honest, maybe I'll do it in a secret way.
Now, is this something that you would put on a blog, or is this something that you would kind of publish? Like, how would you do
it? What
if you started a podcast where that was the basis? It's kind of like Serial, where basically it's just you telling short stories.
That would be really cool. I've talked with a few friends about maybe doing podcast stuff eventually. I think that'd be fun.
Yeah.
Right now I'm kind of sketching out some ideas for it. But yeah, I thought about, like, in the old days in magazines, you know, people would run, you know, chapters of a story, like one chapter a month kind of thing. I think that'd be cool.
Yeah, I could get behind that, because that's something I think a lot of not even just fans of bands would love to, but I think people in my position, you know, people that want to get into press related type stuff or just in the music industry in general, I think that's a good lesson to learn, you know, from, you know, how bands kind of treat people, or, you know, how the industry kind of treats people. Sometimes it's messy.
Oh, can I give you another example?
Yes, please. Are you going to drop names? Are you going to drop names? Are you going to person X?
Yeah. No, I'll drop it. I mean, sometimes it's, the bands are so big, I'm not doing any damage here. There's a few years ago, AP does their Warped cover every summer,
right,
and has different front men and women on the cover. And so one of the covers had Matty Mullins from Memphis Mayfire and Kellen Quinn, you know, right, the hot guy from Sleeping with Sirens.
He's a babe.
The babe.
Not really.
Yeah, the baby face.
I like both guys. He's too skinny. Anyways.
He's got great hair. But so they had their, Matty and Kellen had their interview together, had a little joint interview. And these are always, the Warped covers are always, like, pretty light. It's a smart thing to do. It's always like, you know, what are you looking forward to? What's your go-to snacks and stuff like that.
Right.
So Matty and Kellen are obviously little buddies, and they had their interview together. And I read it maybe like three times before I talked to somebody about it, because I couldn't believe what, especially Matty, had said. There was stuff about, now I read it so many times because I thought, is there any way that they can be kidding? Some of it, you know, and some stuff maybe they were, some stuff they weren't, but it wasn't clear that they were kidding. And the way even that the writer, Ryan Downey, responded to certain things they said wasn't like there was nothing conveying that it was joking around. Ryan even kind of called them out on certain things and had them re-explain it, and they still didn't really explain it in a joking way. They still came off super jerky. There was stuff about treating their crew like slaves, like, we don't call them crew, we call them slaves. Stuff about them having their own bus with their wives respectively because they didn't want to hang out with the other band members. Two or three things that were just ridiculous, and I actually brought some of this up to another guy that was on the cover, another big band, and it was Dan from the Wonder Years.
Okay.
And I say that because I put him in the same category as Jason Butler, where he says whatever he wants,
yeah,
and he stands up for people, and ton of respect for that guy.
Right.
So him and I were discussing that later, and just through him and a few other people standing around, kind of some more similar stories came out and stuff, just things that they'd observed. And none of it was, you know, it's not like it was, you know, doing drugs behind closed doors, nothing like that whatsoever.
Right.
But enough to where it was just like, oh, like, this is kind of how some of these bigger bands might act.
Mm-hmm.
And that they're serious about it. And to me, what killed it was just that this went in print. Like, and I just thought, I remember going and kind of like looking at social media thinking like, does anyone else notice this? And all I found was kids just, you know, like posting the cover, posting, you know, the pictures that were inside, just like, oh, hotties, I love these guys, and your music changed my life and stuff. And I'm like, man, these guys are like shitting on you.
Right.
Like a hardcore. And I don't know if you're taking it, like I'm taking it wrong and you're taking it right. And you're just like, nope, this is just funny. And this is just whatever. And I'm taking it too seriously. Or like, you don't care how they treat you and how they treat other people and their fans. And this magazine that is, you know, putting them on the cover, like that just blew my mind. And it's, again, it's not to say that I think everyone should be and is so super well behaved and sorry, somebody almost got ran over behind me. So it's not to say that I have this crazy optimistic you know, everyone needs to hold hands or anything, but right. It was just a good example of seeing somebody at that level really not caring at all.
Right.
And I think I wrote a blog post for Heart Support, and I tried to get a hold of Ryan Downey to ask him his thoughts on it, and he never got back to me. But it was just so surprising.
I think that's something that I think the press kind of, I think they get that vibe from Matt Carter when he shits on all the press that they have to do sometimes.
Yeah.
I remember after I released the interview with him, I think it was like the week after on Bad Christian, he was talking about like a couple of press things that he had to do. And I'm like, oh crap, don't bring me up.
Right.
I think you brought up like a radio show and then some overseas thing. And I'm like, oh, thank God. I don't think I would have been able to cope with that. I probably would have quit. I'm just kidding. I wouldn't have quit. I would have gotten back on the show and I would have proven why he was on the show.
Right.
But you brought up Ryan Downey, and I think we could finish off with this. This is a good thing. Well, you know, I'll get your advice for independent bands looking for publicists, but I think you kind of already touched up on that. But with Ryan Downey, I am sure you read his Tim Lamnesis interview a while ago. I think it was over a year ago now.
Yeah.
When, you know, I'm assuming that, you know, we both of us come from a Christian background. We grew up in the church because just, you know, you... I don't know. I'm just going to assume that you grew up in the church like I did. And you've grown up on these bands that have kind of, you know, proclaimed Christ on stage, like Under Oath and like For Today does now. But Tim Lamnesis brought out the fact that, you know, a lot of these Christian bands, they're not really who they say they are. How dangerous do you think that is? Do you think that's something that we should actually care about nowadays compared to like maybe when Tooth and Nail and Solid State were as big as they were, and that's where most of our Christian upbringing came from?
I love this topic.
Good.
I think as an adult and being able to have the hindsight of looking back of like how much I cared about this music at the time, and you're right, like I do think it influenced, you know, your own faith to a degree, but it's tough to say. I do love that there are people now. Kevin Max was on the Bad Christian podcast a while back, and to hear someone that, like, I mean, for most of us around our age, like DC Talk was just so massive. Like,
right.
I mean, that was, I mean, I think that's the first like rock and roll, you know, I heard as a kid. Yeah. And so, yeah, which is really funny. But it's awesome to hear, you know, him to, you know, today say like, yeah, it got bad. I don't know. I mean, as a kid, how much of that can you really fathom? So it's really tough. I don't know. I'm so curious now what kids are like in youth groups and what they listen to, and if it's the same mentality and that same feeling of like, wow, this means a lot.
Right.
I mean, Tooth and Nail was so cool. I mean, other than that, I remember going to the CD closet at my church and being like, well, I guess I'll take the Supertones.
Right.
Like,
yeah, because, I mean, so Supertones Strike Back, that was it. That was it.
Yeah, those were your options.
Yeah.
And so it blew, you know, stuff like Tooth and Nail. I mean, for me, it was MXPX, like, right. Blew the roof off my mind. I mean, saying, like, Mom, these guys have tattoos and stuff, but it's okay. Like, they look like this, but there's no swearing, and they're on this label. Like, that was a total game changer. So I don't know what kids, if kids are like that today. I'm sure there's those kids like me that were super nerdy about it and stuff. But at the same time, I didn't listen to band. I wouldn't have listened to Four Today when I was 12.
Right.
If that was around, you know, like, that would have been way too brutal with two O's for me.
Right.
So anyways, back to your question. I think they, it's so tough. I want to say, like, the more conservative part of me wants to say, like, yeah, they need to be careful because whether they like it or not, they're role models, that whole argument. But I don't know, you grow up and you get to know not only these people that you grew up on, but just other believers and other Christians that do hold the same core values, I'd say, as you, but on the fringes of things, you know, like Bad Christian talks about swearing and drinking and all that. And to look back and say, like, if I would have seen, you know, Emery drinking when I was however old.
Man, I have a total story. I have a total story. Like, the first time I saw them was at Take Action Tour. I don't know if maybe it was the show. Maybe it was when I saw them at the Glass House with That City's Burn. No, it was Take Action because it's at the Glass or House of Blues. But I remember someone was like, guys, Dave and Toby are drinking upstairs. And I was like, what? No.
Yeah.
Are you serious? Yeah. And I was like, I don't know how to feel about that. And, I mean, the older you get, though, I don't want to say, like, your mind changes, but, I mean, I'm not super straight edge anymore, but I kind of hold myself accountable as much as I can. But
well, I think the reason that maybe they, and I don't want to say give up on that, but that they maybe don't care as much about being seen holding a beer or smoking a cigarette or whatever it is that there's just so many variations to what especially kids believe and what kids think. These are hard and fast rules because I'm a kid and I haven't seen the gray area of the world yet.
Right.
I think there's too much variance there for them to please anyone, let alone everyone. So I know I did one of the final interviews with Amber Lynn, and I one of my favorite bands, and Steven, again, hold him up, you know, such a respectable dude, and he had told this story about, you know, a few years back they were hurting for money, and, like, I don't know, some beer company offered them a bunch of money if they could wrap their van or wrap their bus, and he was like, you know, none of us have a problem with drinking. But that was way too much. That was way too much of, like, we're going to get too many questions. And, you know, like, that was just such a good example of, like, just using your common sense, I think.
Right.
I don't like the bands that try to throw it in your face and just be like, yeah, we drink, we smoke. Like, I'm sleeping with girls, but whatever. You know, like, God loves us. Like, it's like, I don't really think you're getting the point there. But, I don't know. I guess I hope for, like, common sense. But at the same time, I've never been in that spotlight, and I'm sure it gets old, and especially, like, Toby jokes a lot on the podcast about, like, you know, he's 38, 39, and he's like, well, like, you know, if his audience is like 12 and 13 years old, like, that is a gigantic gap for for you to try to, like, please that kid, you know, and do the things that he thinks his role model should do. I don't think you could ever figure that out. So
I'm sure there's no 12-year-olds listening to Bad Christian, though. Maybe some. I don't know.
I would hope not. Very. I would hope it's way too vulgar for them.
Yeah.
They have to listen with their parents.
They should do what Stone Cold does. Have a family friendly, and then have a unleashed version.
Is that what he does?
That's what he does. Yeah. On one day he has a family friendly one. He doesn't cuss at all. He might drop, like, a couple GDs here and there, but nothing really. And then he has, obviously,
I've heard his podcast is awesome. I keep forgetting to get it.
It's amazing. If you're into pro wrestling as much as I am, it's amazing. And
I'm not, but
he's a great podcast host no matter what. He's amazing. Anyway.
I certainly got a lot into it. I go off and on, but I think Pete Holmes is really great too.
Who is?
Pete Holmes, a comedian.
I haven't listened to his, no.
Yeah. Huh. Get on that. Pete Holmes, I think I honestly have, like, yours, Bad Christian, Pete Holmes, and probably Rob Bell.
Oh, so you're one of those.
One of those. Well, they take up a lot of data.
No, because
that's why
the Bad Christian's in there. No, okay.
I'm gonna protest for Matt and Toby. Instead of putting out like a second episode that's family friendly, I'm gonna protest for them to just bleep everything out.
There would be no episode. There would be no episode. It would be like a rap video on MTV.
It would be like the beatboxing at the beginning, which that's still pretty vulgar, a sound that you can make with your mouth. So let's probably cut that out.
I love when Toby cusses so much, Matt will stop.
Yeah. Did you listen to that Driscoll episode? Holy cow.
Yes, I did. That was my favorite episodes, at least so far, are the Stephen Christian ones. I love those. I mean, the Amberlin.
Yeah.
I'm a big fan of Amberlin. I'm really sad I didn't get to see him on their last tour. But that Driscoll episode, jeez. I mean,
yeah.
I can't listen to every episode. I most of the time I only listen to the episodes when they have people that are in bands on.
Yeah.
Because when it comes to like talking about theology and stuff, I'll just listen to the guy's banter. That's my favorite part. But I'm not big into like arguing about theology or belief systems. Like, I just think, you know, sometimes they're just things you can't really argue about.
Well, I think the best, well, it depends on the mood, of course, but I think the best is when they can mix both. I used to work for Showbread, too.
Okay.
And, and they're all here in Portland now, and we actually go to the same church. But so I just had, when Emery was in town, I brought Josh over and had Josh on the Bad Christian show, and Josh is a pastor and stuff. And so to hear, they're both from the South. All those dudes are from the South, Josh and the Emery guys, but I knew that their theology was going to be fairly clashing, so. That's going to be a good one, but
is that coming
yeah,
on
they
soon?
They actually have,
or that's already been on.
It hasn't been on yet. I think they're a little backed up, but they just had an actor on, Mike Vogel.
Yes,
his was really good. I mean, I'm super into movies and actors and all that stuff too, but his was great.
Yeah, there are those few episodes where I actually feel uplifted and like it's kind of sad. A Christian podcast, not. I mean, I kind of take it back. I always feel slightly uplifted, especially after the news. But that Mike Vogel, just listen to him talk about his faith and like what he's gone through and the trials. Mm-hmm. I think that's something we don't really realize when we're kids or when we're new, is that, you know, things are going to get really tough. I mean, you could learn so much through Sunday school, but after that, you know, when you're out of that system, it's like, dang, like this is what they were really talking about. And it's a lot harder than they said it was going to be. And I love the way he kind of personified like how he deals with kissing on, you know, in when he's acting or when it comes to, you know, proclaiming to the world that he is a Christian. Like, that's something you don't really hear too much. Let alone from actors, but even bands nowadays, you kind of find out about bands later on while they're, you know, kind of going down that road.
Well, I wonder too if among bands and maybe actors to a degree, but if there's kind of an unspoken sentiment of like, and I think this is probably what Bad Christian really stemmed from, is people saying like, we don't want to be seen as role models because we want to have the room, and I hope that you provide the grace for me to mess up if I should. So I think maybe something with Bad Christian and other bands might do this too, is they kind of want to get ahead of the bullet a little bit and say like, hey, before you start thinking I'm the greatest person ever, I'm just going to tell you that I do this, and this. And I think maybe that just, even though it might shock, you know, person X, I think after that wears off, it's just like, you just kind of balance out to where you're like, oh, we're on the same level. Like, we're the same person. Like, you do a pretty cool job and you create stuff that I really like and other people like, but internally we're pretty much on the same level.
Right.
What I was trying to think of earlier, this is going to make my thing way funnier about censoring the podcast. Maybe there's a lot of these companies that, like, Christian companies, you could, like, give a movie to, and they would, like, edit out all the bad stuff and give it back to you.
Okay.
You remember that?
Well, I kind of do, yeah.
That was definitely a thing, if it's not still. That's why it was funny to me.
So you think there should be, there should be a Walmart brand for Bad Christian?
I would just love to hear all the swear words replaced with like clown noises or something.
besides, you know, the F word, they say like Vicodin or.
Yeah, I would even fart sounds would do it for me.
Oh man, we gotta really push that. We gotta push that.
I know. I'm trying to make changes from within.
I like how this question started from how do you feel about Ryan Downey's interview with Tim Lambesis, and basically now we're, you know, analyzing the podcast in which you represent. So you're doing your job.
Yeah, I'm bringing it back to the forefront of the topic,
yes.
The conversation.
Well, okay, since
yeah.
you're doing
speaking
that.
Speaking of fart noises, yeah.
Free sex podcast, right?
Oh, yeah, yeah. Speaking yeah. of fart noises, there's the free sex podcast.
What stuff does Cadence have going on album-wise, and also the Bad Christian brand? They started a couple new podcasts, so do that.
Yeah, I think the goal there as far as Carter and what he's going to be doing is kind of a podcast network, possibly. Mm-hmm. Free Sex is the one that just came out, and that's great. I've only gotten a chance to listen to it a little bit, and it's funny because I listened when they were on the Bad Christian show to promote it and stuff, and kind of talking about like, is this for married people? Is this for single people and all that? And I think that's really interesting. I just think it's a refreshing thing to hear about, mm-hmm. and especially obviously from women. Like, you can listen to Bad Christian or talk to your buddies, or if you have friends that you can have the sex talk with, and that it's not just a bunch of goofing around. Like I think it's really great and really healthy. But to hear like women talk about it and like married women, then you know, they're coming from this good place and this helpful place and stuff. I started an episode today and they're hilarious. They're really funny and pretty vulgar. I mean, in a really funny way, but again, knowing that's coming from this, well, I mean, just no, not, I mean, I think it's probably going to get worse too, obviously, but I think, like I said, I used to work for XXX Church, which for people that don't know is basically something that helps people with porn addiction,
right?
And helps people in porn get out of the industry if they want. I think stuff like that and like the Free Sex podcast and Bad Christian, like it's amazing to see these types of ministries stand up and say like, we've been ignoring this and it's really bad. We've let this become a really big problem in the church and really the world at large. And, yeah, it's uncomfortable. Yeah. It seems silly or whatever, but we're just going to embrace all that silliness so that we can talk about it. I think that's, even just from outside of a ministry standpoint, from a marketing standpoint of just saying, yeah, like, what are we so afraid of here? Everyone has these parts. Everyone has these body parts. Everyone's doing this thing. But nobody's supposed to talk about it. So I think it's cool that topic is so much in the forefront right now. Anyways, again, back to your question. I think Bad Christian will keep moving into different territories, and that's going to keep doing Break It Down on different albums, and really on just different topics in general. Matt's super intelligent, Matt Carter, and I think he's super interested in a lot of different things. So that one will be cool. I think that'll bring in a lot of different weird stuff. As far as bands and stuff, I really, when I started the Cadence Inc. back up, which was only this last January, and thankfully I acquired Bad Christian and stuff like that, I really only had two bands that were outside of the Bad Christian label. One of them that you had, Alaska,
great.
And then the Woodman's Bay. Yeah.
I've had both of them.
Alaska's still great. Oh, yeah, that's right. You did have Joe
yeah,
on.
I've had both of them, yeah.
That's right. Yeah, Joe, formerly of My Truly My Bride.
Yes.
He's signed to CI Records and put out an album. And, yeah, he's doing
now he's a
lot
a
of stuff.
No, he's a model.
Yeah, he's always a model.
He's a talk about babes.
Talk about that dude's hair and mustache.
Yeah, sorry.
No, you're fine. Yeah, so I don't know. A big thing. I have a lot of ideas, and like I said, the little short story stuff. I just really want to keep it open. I want to be able to do PR and have that be part of it, but I want to be able to figure out other things I can do and just keep it a service that's for helping bands and helping musicians. And again, if it's something that I don't feel like is in my realm, that I can at least go do my best to connect you with somebody that does know what they're talking about,
right.
And does know what they're doing. So it's certainly can be a hard thing to promote because it's I struggle on summing it up, you know, in a few sentences. But it's nice to be in a place in life and in your career too, where you're kind of just like, if it works, great. If not, okay. and I think just taking some risks on things and being able to be picky and picking out bands that you really do want to work with and you really do believe in, whether it's their music or their message or whatever. It's nice to be able to be picky. So I, at this time, Acidity's Burn is my big focus right now. Emery put out their record last month and doing good. The last record, which you interviewed Carter about, that sold more records its first week than their last Tooth & Nail release.
Really?
It sold about 9,000 the first week.
They did a great job promoting it, though. I think the way that they promoted that album was way better than anything Tooth & Nail probably could have done. Because they got the Bad Christian audience, and then they have their own audience. And then they did the Break It Down podcast. For me, that's refreshing as a songwriter. That's probably the best podcast that has come out.
Yeah.
I love, I haven't listened to the Free Sex one. But at least between the two, Bad Christian and Break It Down, I prefer Break It Down a little more. There's no Joey.
There's no fat jokes.
I miss the fat jokes. I like those, but,
Yeah. No, I agree. And, I'm not a musician in the least. There's certainly stuff that I'll still listen to them because I do think it's all interesting. And I at least can say, I'm trying to learn certain things. But there's certainly some stuff that I feel bogged down about. When he had the latest episode, he's got Aaron Sprinkle, which I haven't listened to that one yet. But
that's going to be my nighttime drive.
Yeah, that is going to be a good one. But, yeah, I just love that they're doing so many different things. And, as like I said, as far as this, I don't know. I would love to figure out what my next thing is. We were talking about Emery. Their album sold 9,000 the first week. So to say that, they're going to experiment with this Bad Christian thing, do all their own branding, all their own work, after years of working with the label, and they just came out and killed it. I love that. And I have nothing against Tooth & Nail or labels at all, but I love to see someone just be like, I think I could do this on my own. Right. And then just slap the hell out of everyone else that's said, no, we have the formula figured out. Good luck doing it on your own. So I'm super happy to be a part of that.
Dude, I'm happy that I got to, help provide for that. I don't know how many people actually bought it because of the show, but,
probably all of them.
Yeah. I hope so. I don't think it was, I don't, well, hopefully they all bought it. Jason,
yeah.
Dude, thank you so much for coming on. This is a great time getting to talk to you about not just the industry, but just, about life in general. It's kind of nice. That was an MXPX pun.
I'm glad you ended with that.
Yeah.
This is going to be now your highest, number. So
Acidity's Burn doesn't even know what is.
Throw it. Yeah. As long as you tag all that, Kellen Quinn stuff.
So I will tell you one last thing. Intertwine us for history. It will seal our fate. But I'll take my back. Can't stop these words, no, no. They all just rush to me. But I guess I've lost my senses. There's just so much to see. Many times in my life I doubted your
You know, growing up, there are some of those bands that you listen to that you're kind of like, man, why did I listen to them? You know, when you're older, kind of think back and be like, man, that's some band that I regret listening to. I'll tell you the truth. Emery is not that band for me. They are nowhere near that band. And I think the reason why people kind of go back and think that way is because the bands that they listen to, they don't progress. So they go album to album playing the same music. And you might kind of say that about Emery because, you know, there's albums that sound the same. And then when they kind of go a different direction, you know, it's not, well, I won't say it's not as great because I love all their albums, but some people will say it's not as great. I think the band will even say it wasn't that great. But Emery has been able to not only keep their sound from beginning to present, but they've also been able to kind of progress and learn different tricks on how to make that original sound better. And I think you guys could kind of see that with their song Thrash. That was a jam that just played right now. And, you know, when you listen to their album, their brand new album, You Are Never Alone, you're going to get the old Emery vibes. I guarantee it. But at the same time, it's brand new. And not the band brand new, even though they're terrific too. It is, you know, a new Emery sound that is wrapped up in the original Emery sound. And I think that's why you guys should go pick up You Are Never Alone. Yeah, I just did a sales spot for Emery. Go figure. Go check out the Bad Christian podcast as well. They just had a really great interview with Josh Dives, as Jameson mentioned in this interview. The lead vocalist of Showbread. I've never been in a Showbread. I'll admit that right now. So when those Christians knock on my door with their signs, with the circle and the slash through the eighth notes, and they say, why don't you like Showbread? You know, I probably won't be able to give you an answer. I just never really, really, really liked Showbread. But Josh Dice does an incredible interview with the Bad Christian guys. So go check that out. And I'm going to thank Jameson for coming on the show, for talking about his job, for talking about his previous jobs, also giving great advice to those bands that might be looking for a publicist or
might be looking to cut it in the music industry. Like, it's difficult. It's such a hard deal to break through those walls, to break through those chains. And I think Jameson does a great job. He's always looking out for the little man. I mean, if it wasn't for people like Jameson, this podcast would not even exist, right? Like, if it wasn't for Mark LaFay, the manager of Hasted A, this podcast would not have been able to pick up bands like Emery or As Cities Burn, or, you know, even the Woodsman's Babe, or even Kevin Lyman, for that matter. I don't know if, you know, Jameson mentioned it. He said that, you know, because he looked at this track, the track record of this show, he knew who to offer to us here on the Kill Rock podcast. And he's always looking out for the little man. I mean, when he gave us As Cities Burn, you know, this podcast, we average about 200 to 300 downloads a week. Like, I think that's great for a small podcast, but it's not what most publicists are looking for. I don't know if publicists really see the power of the podcast yet. And it's probably because these small podcasts only get 200, 300, you know, downloads a week. And that's not including plays. Sometimes plays could add up, you know, depending on where your podcast is located. But, you know, I think podcasts, because it's, you know, it's not a new medium, but it's not YouTube. And I think that's why publicists, they would rather go to the YouTubers first rather than go to the podcast first. But the thing is, I feel like more bands are more comfortable talking for podcasts because there's not a camera in their face. And because most of what I do here is on the phone or through Skype, I think it's more comfortable talking on the phone for people than actually meeting face to face and having to make eye contact. And, you know, whether that's just me being antisocial or the band's just meeting so many people in one day on a tour, it's difficult. And I understand that. That's why I love doing podcasting. And I think Jameson sees the power of podcasts, not only because he represents the Bad Christian Guys, but because, you know, he's able to offer up bands, not just to my podcast, but I'm sure a lot of other podcasts and radio shows and journalists and all that junk. Journalists aren't junk. I'm sorry, guys. If you work for all those magazines, you're not junk, except for Substream. But that's a different story. Okay, I like Substream. There was just a lot of issues going on during the Warped Tour stuff with Substream and the Faces of Music. I don't want to get into it now. I don't know if I can get into it because it's not really my business. But Jameson worked for Substream, so, you know, I won't talk about Substream that much or that bad. Thank you guys for joining us here in the Kill Rock podcast. Episode 55 with Jameson Ketchum from the Cadence Inc. Go check out audibletrial.com/killrock and help support the Kill Rock podcast. I swear we're still fixing killrockpodcast.com. But it will be back online soon. I promise. I guarantee it. Actually, it's still online, but there's just a lot of difficulties going on with it. But this week, I promise. I promise, 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 it'll be back online. Also, stay tuned. We have another Warped Tour special next Tuesday featuring Knuckle Puck. They have the new album called Copacetic coming out pretty soon. We have Lou from Palisades talking about Mind Games, and we also have While She Sleeps. They just released a new album called Brainwashed. We're going to talk about why their lead vocalist was not at the first 3 days of Warped Tour. So stay tuned for that. That is next Tuesday. We're going to play one last jam from our special Warped Tour Episode 1 edition of the Kill Rock podcast with Boy Meets World. This song is off their brand new album, Become Someone. It's called Feel It in the Air. Like I said, thank you guys for joining us next Tuesday, Warped Tour special number 2. And Thursday, we have Phineas here on the Kill Rock podcast. Maybe this sounds crazy, but there's something in the air. I can feel it. This sounds crazy. Yeah.
drifted for the shores. Will you come with me?
Just to feel the ocean breeze, have the sand beneath our feet.
Let's make these nights a little longer. Drive around all night until we get the feeling right. There's something in the air. They kiss me drunk on you. I know you feel it too. We're unstoppable. There's nothing we can't do. Strikes half past one, but our night's just begun. The sights that we have seen, making of memories. Let's grab another drink, and I don't really.